This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
What up? Oh, all right. I'm just on one today. I'm sorry, guys.
And Brock Rahm.
Cool. That absolutely makes sense. You can absolutely do that.
Well, there's Brock's intro.
After traveling around the world at sea, Andy Perlman ventured into social media and worked her way up to the Pittsburgh Penguins digital media team and is currently the VP of digital. We talk about time and attention, finding new platforms, and making the space for creativity.
Do y'all want to clap on five?
Yep.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack, so if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Excited to have Andy Perlman here joining us today, Vice President of Digital at the Pittsburgh Penguins. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Excited.
Yeah, we're going to dive into some social media, get into digital, how you got into your role that you're at now. But first, something jumped out to me. You spent a semester at sea through the University of Virginia. Can you give me a little background into what you were doing? It looks like it was maybe the last year of college for you.
Yeah, so it's like the best time of my life. I knew for sure I wanted to spend a semester abroad, and I was looking at all the programs, and I wanted a little bit of everything. It's very my style. I wanted to go to every country. I wanted to do everything. And when I saw a semester at sea, it was just the perfect mix of being able to do that. So I had this semester, I think the second semester of my junior year of college, went around the world, literally, in a ship with other students. And we went to South America, Africa, and then Asia, and then came back around and finished up in San Diego. So pretty amazing trip, lots of different cultures and crazy food experiences, and just an awesome time altogether.
So did you end up, it sounds like you ported in a couple different places. Was there like schooling going on the boat while you were out at sea, or what was that experience?
Yeah, so class was while you were on the ship, and then we had certain projects and things that we were expected to go research or see in certain countries. So there were certain excursions that needed to happen for your classes. But a lot of the time it was when you're docked, you can go do whatever you want to do, go explore places you want to see, and you just take your friends and go and see what you want to see. And then you get back to class and schoolwork when you get back on the ship.
That sounds super cool. What's your favorite place that you visited?
Probably South Africa. There were just so many cool things there that were so different. We went hiking up Table Mountain, which was just like fun adventure. I went skydiving there, and it's beautiful. We went through wine country, and we got to see Robben Island and really learn some interesting history, and just a nice mix of a lot of different things going on. I didn't get to do the whole safari thing, which I wish I had, but I didn't have very much time there. So definitely would still want to go back if I could.
It'll be interesting to see how much this plays into your excursion, if you will, through social media and understanding different people. And I think the sense that I've gotten from looking into your background a little bit is that you are hyper-focused on wanting to understand your fans. Does any of that come from your time abroad, or how did you end up getting into a point where you said, I want to understand the psychology of how people work so I can deliver content for them?
Yeah, I think it's always just been a thing that is in my personality. My parents are going through old things in their house, and I was over there yesterday looking through old things, and I found my college recommendation from my high school English teacher. And I was reading through it, and one of the things she said about me, which I think is just very much my personality, I like to question things and I like to understand where people are coming from. And, you know, I would always ask questions in class and want to understand why I was doing a certain assignment. And So for me, it's that's always been a huge part of my personality, is just really wanting to understand other people. And I think that goes into the psychology of the fans is, you know, if I post something, how do I think fans will react, and what are all the ways they could take this? And I think on social, you go back and forth so many times about how should I write this, and does this word make a difference? And I always think that it does, because people, I mean, things get misconstrued on social media all the time. One of my favorite books is So You've Been Publicly Shamed. And there's all these stories about people posting things on social media and it being taken in a way that they didn't intend, and how it kind of changes the course of these people's lives. And I think so much about that when I'm drafting something or working on something. I've always found it very interesting. And I'm sure Semester at Sea was a part of that too, is really just going and meeting new people and wanting to learn how things work in different places and different cultures than my own. So
that's awesome. All right. For people who don't know who you are, can you give us a little bit of background on your schooling and how you got into professional sports?
Sure. So I went to University of Maryland for undergrad. I studied government and politics, and I also had a focus on leadership. I wasn't sure really what I wanted to do for a career at that point, but it felt right. It felt interesting. So I studied it, and I assumed I would figure it out later. I started kind of down a pre-law track. I was in a pre-law frat. I thought maybe I would go into law school, and I thought contracts were interesting. I thought sports was interesting, which kind of goes back to what I was saying before. Just, I really think it's interesting the way certain things are written and how it can make an impact, which is why I was interested in the contracts. And then sports was just a passion of mine growing up. I always loved watching sports, playing sports. So I went to a grad school fair, and I walked around and I talked to some people, and one of the stations was for a program at Georgetown in sports industry management. And one of the tracks had a sports law class, and I was talking to a current student, and it just sounded like something I was really interested in. I didn't know where that could really take me for a future career, but I was like, this sounds really cool. Maybe I could make this a thing for me. And I ended up going to a session, and I heard from other current students and the dean of the program. And I was convinced that's what I wanted to do and what I needed to do. So I did that right. I graduated a little bit early from undergrad, and the semester I should have graduated was my first semester in that program at Georgetown. And in that program, my track focused on strategic marketing, new media, and communication. So really exactly what I'm doing now. And since then, lots of different internships, one job at an ad agency, and then moving my way up through the Penguins for the last 7.5 years.
I think when I hear from people who are getting into the industry who have an interest in it, they seem to want to focus on, well, this is the team that I want to work for. What did being at those different places for those internships teach you about the different ways that people work or anything like that?
Well, I think when it comes to, you know, where you want to be and what team you want to work for, I've been very lucky. You know, this is my hometown. Pittsburgh is where I grew up. I grew up watching the Penguins. My dad was a season ticket holder. So for me, it's very easy to know the ins and outs of the team because I grew up with it. I know the memes. I know the culture around it. It's just very turnkey. But I think that's something that you can do anywhere. You just have to put in more work. And through my internships and different jobs leading up to the point where I started at the Penguins, I think I learned more about myself and how to work with other people. In school, you're kind of just, you're working on your projects or you're working group projects, but it's not, sometimes a group project ends and then you're like, okay, well, now I'm never going to work with these people again. But when you're working at work, it's like, okay, you need to keep good relationships. If you disagree, how do you communicate that? if you think someone has an idea that's not a great idea, like, how do you say, here's something else I think we should do that it's an idea that I think will work better, rather than, you know, being like, I think that won't work. And I think those are the main things, is just learning how to really work with other people and the things that, just that real life experience that helps you become a better human being when you're working with other people of different personality types. And I think the one job that was maybe even beyond that, I worked in an ad agency right before I started working at the Penguins, and I wasn't there for very long, but I had a boss that was very honest with me about my strengths and my weaknesses. And I was working with a lot of people that were in communications, but also account management and creative, and working with all of those people that generally have different vibes going into their jobs, I think was very helpful for me. And then when my boss came to me and he said, hey, like, Andy, one of the things you need to work on is being more comfortable with ambiguity. Like, I've always thought of that as like a strength of mine, is like loving to find the answer and being prepared for any situation. And then finding out that, you know, something like that could also be a weakness of, like, sometimes you need to like chill and just like wait for things to like get solidified. I think that that's always been something that I've thought about, is like, okay, sometimes there's not an answer and sometimes we need to just like wait and we'll get there. And, you know, you can't prepare for everything. So yeah, I think you learn something from everywhere you go, regardless of what kind of job it is. You know, you might love it, you might hate it, you might have a great boss, you might have coworkers that annoy you, whatever, but it all kind of ends up being helpful. At least it has for me, in new situations that I've moved into.
It's interesting. It seems like you've had a recent opportunity to flex that ambiguity muscle with the pandemic hitting. I guess I'm curious, how did you and your team adapt in that time?
Yeah, it wasn't easy, right? Like, it's so much work, and to have so many changes that were unanticipated and new promotions going on, and sure, everyone in social media heard the words make good like a million times this past year. And, you know, no different, I guess, on the Penguins end, is you have all these things in contracts, and how do you make up for nobody's coming into the building and seeing a giant sign, or nobody's watching a video on the big screen in the game? And how do you move those things to digital? So I think for us, it's always just been listening to what everyone needs, trying to do the best we can to provide assets that we feel like are good and aren't taking away from what we're trying to do with the fans, really providing value to the fans while also providing value to a partner. Or now it's a lot of ticketing messaging we're getting ready to start sending out there. But how do we make it that it, in a way that it feels good when a fan is consuming it, and not too salesy and not too pushy, but really something that's just for Penguins fans to enjoy and be a part of our community. So it's been hard, though. I mean, I know I mentioned earlier when we were just talking offline, is we had some furloughs here and a lot of change. And I think having fewer employees doing the same work, also more work and different work and changing things on the fly, it's been a struggle. And I think we've made it out okay, but that's definitely a tribute to a lot of good people that I work with that put in extra hours and had really good attitudes through it.
Yeah, it's definitely been a trying time. You're in a smaller market in Pittsburgh, with kind of a bigger brand, though, with, especially in the NHL with the Penguins, the more historic teams from the 90s, and obviously the more recent championships as well in the mid 20-teens. How do you handle that relationship with the fans and talking to the fans through the time frames?
So I think, you know, when you want to reach a fan of a team, you look and you're like, usually when we talk to partners, you know, or like, who's your target audience? And Penguins fans, you really can be any age. we have fans and they're diehard fans that are, you know, age eight, age death, you know, pretty much. Like we have, you know, a huge wide range of fans, and then what they're interested in outside of the Penguins is very different. So I think what we try to do is target to platforms a bit and make sure we have different messages out there for everybody without pushing too far out of our brand. So we know who we are. Sometimes we're trying to hit, you know, a younger audience, you know, maybe a Gen Z audience who's considering buying tickets for the first time. And other times we're really marketing to a season ticket holder audience that's a little bit older. And the way we speak is a little bit different, but the general theme behind what we're saying is always our brand, and we have brand pillars. You know, it's energy, it's drive, it's innovation. And the way we kind of focus on those things might be different, but generally the themes are the same when it comes to how we speak about the Penguins and who we are as a team and the way we sell our product, which is always the same. It's always Pittsburgh Penguins hockey, which has certain characteristics, I think, that always kind of fit in with what that is.
You mentioned your three pillars there. How do you take that, those three pillars, and leverage them when you are going to execution?
Yeah, so it can be a lot of different things. Sometimes we focus on one pillar more than another. I would say it could be as simple as, hey, energy is one of our pillars. So when we're building an ad, does this player look like he's just standing there not moving, or does he look like he's really like about to exert some energy and like there's movement into the photo? I think that kind of goes along the same lines for drive, is like, even if somebody's looking a little bit more still, does he look like inspired? Does it look like something great is about to happen? What is the look of the shot, and how do we keep it from looking kind of just static? Like that's very anti-Penguins, is like static looking. So how do we add movement? How do we add passion, I guess, like into what we're creating? And I think when it comes to innovation, it's really trying to be on the forefront of everything we're doing. So, you know, when we look at vendors, I can say, you know, hey, like our other team's working with you, and we hope that they say yes, and we can hear about one other team working with them. We love getting in early and trying new things. And I think it's always a battle to be able to try new things and not be afraid to fail with a big business, especially this past year. You know, you want to take very calculated risks, but I think that's something that's in our DNA, and thankfully on the digital side, like innovation is a very easy pillar for us to kind of touch on all the time and try and do new things. So I think that's a big piece of that is just, you know, are we trying a new software? Are we trying a new type of contest? Do we want to build something new? You know, a couple of years ago we did the Twitter vending machine, and it was like, it felt so like cool and new and innovative. And like, I didn't think of it as like a big strategy at the time, but I love that we can look at something like that and say, hey, there's this cool new technology. Like we want to try it. And I think one of the biggest and best examples like that is we were the first professional sports team on our app through Yinzcam. And now they're like everywhere. There's so many teams that are using their company as a provider. And I think for us, it's the fact that we get in and try that first. It kind of gives us a unique opportunity to really grow within whatever we're doing there.
Yeah, that's great. When you talk about innovation, how big is your team right now?
So right now we have, I kind of think of us almost like as a small ad agency within our digital group. We have someone that's focused on our app. We have, I would say probably two people that are primarily focused on social, two primarily focused on web, definitely some role players on the creative side. So we have a graphic designer and a video producer. And then a lot of people that do a lot of merging of all of these things. So our team right now is seven, eight, maybe with me, I think. It's getting bigger and bigger. It feels like it used to be like three and it was like, it's easy. And now I have to like count everybody out in my head and make sure I'm adding everyone in the group emails. Like it's definitely, getting bigger and better, and our responsibilities continue to grow. So
yeah, that's partly why I wanted to ask, because when you talk about innovation and wanting to try new things, obviously everybody has day-to-day responsibilities they have to tend to. So how do you make sure that people find time to play or test out some innovative ideas or things that they feel like speak to them in a sense, so that you're still delivering on what you need to deliver on, and you have time, and your schedule is a lot like ours where there's a lot of games throughout the season too.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's different. And I guess that kind of goes to the whole idea of like every employee is different to work with, and what inspires people is unique. So one of the things that I'm doing for the whole team is we have themed meetings pretty much every Thursday where we talk about ideas. So last Thursday, we knew we had to come up with ideas for an Instagram campaign for one of our partners. So we had a meeting with Instagram on Monday. We said, like, tell us everything new we need to know about the tool. And then on Thursday, we said, okay, well, here's what we know about this brand. We want to come up with this Instagram campaign. Here's what it's worth. Let's all brainstorm. What would we want to create? And, you know, great ideas can come from anywhere. Like, I couldn't build half of the ideas that I've thought of. And so we all work together to come up with a great idea. This next week, we're talking about ticketing, and specifically ticketing on digital and how we sell tickets in a digital space. And if we were to create our own ticket bundles, what would those look like and how would we market them? And the week after that, we're talking all about video and recurring video. And each one of those meetings is kind of run by different people on my team that are interested in different things or are more involved. So I think we create a creative space and on a fairly regular basis and let different people steer the ship a little bit there. But then beyond that, it's just working together. So when somebody does have an idea, wants to run with it a little bit, we can fill in the gaps. So one of the things that comes to mind, a while back, our graphic designer wanted to try out an animation for the first time, like hand-drawn animation. He's like, this might take a while. And we were like, okay, like, let's see. And it took, I think, longer than he thought it was going to take. And we were like, well, it's fine. Like, this is going to be awesome when it's done. And I think we just try and celebrate when we try out those new things. Like, now that he's done it, he probably knows a million ways to make it faster and better. But I think allowing that time taught us, here's generally how long this will take. It taught him, here's what this would look like, and it makes us better. So I think just working together and communicating when we do have an idea like that that we want to run with, and creating space for those creative new moments and that innovation.
I love that. It sounds like you have like a test, iterate, test kind of mentality where you're letting people run with things that they're passionate about too. When it comes to motivation, do you find that people are more motivated that way, or is there a different reason, psychology related, behind that thought process?
For me, it's a lot of trial and error. I would say, like, sometimes we go into meetings and it was like, everyone's feeling kind of like lackadaisical and we need like more focus around what we're talking about. So having those scheduled in advance and knowing what the topic is, and then giving someone the responsibility of being like, you're running this, like you're in charge, I think has been good so far. We've only done it for, you know, a few weeks now. So I don't know that it will stay that way. And I think one of the things for me and for our team in general is we're always flexible and things are always changing on digital. So right now I think this is working for us in the off season. I think it's possible when we start the season, we might feel overwhelmed with other things and maybe we change the structure of how that works. But I think we do things until they work. And then we say, hey, like, this doesn't seem like it's working anymore. Like, what do you, and then I talk to my team and we say, like, what do you think about this? Or I'll just put something on the calendar and we'll try something else. And it may or may not work. We originally, when we were in the office a couple years ago, I guess it was a couple of years ago, like at the beginning of the pandemic, like even before, we were having 15-minute meetings in the morning to talk about TikTok ideas. So everyone just kind of come into my office. We'd throw around a couple ideas, things we've seen, trends, and then we'd all go back to work, but we'd start the day that way. Like, what are some things you saw? And I think they were working out, but then it was like, we couldn't, once we went home, it was like a 15-minute meeting in the morning. It was like, everyone's kind of like at home getting ready. And it wasn't like this nice rapport that we had in person. It was like a stressful, like 15-minute meeting three times a week, which wasn't working. So we moved that to, you know, one day a week. It's now it's an hour, and it's now we know here's the creative time, and it's less of a casual meeting, but it's also still way more fun, and it's just better. So, flexibility is key. I would say that's the key to our success.
Yeah, you're talking about platforms and partners. Can you tell me a little bit about your new text partner community?
Sure. Yeah. So we're working with a vendor called Community. They are phenomenal. It's so exciting to be able to text our fans in a way that feels just like normal text messages. You know, in the past for us, texting has always been more like a newspaper and less like social media. It's just like here, we're blasting out the information to you, and it wasn't like two-way communication. But now with our text, our new text vendor, we can send out a blast text to different groups of people. We can then respond individually. So it's really nice when it comes to targeting. People will enter in their information at the beginning. So we have, you know, a notification that every day I could send a text message when to the people whose birthday it is. And it feels a lot more personal.
Interesting.
But also, yeah, if we have like a question, like one of the ones that recently we had a player doing an interview for us, and we let the fans ask questions. So I sent out a text that said, hey, like, I think the question was, do you prefer the edge of the brownie or the center? Like, if you want to know we want to know your answer to this question, but if you have any burning questions for Kasperi Kapanen, text us back with those questions, and we'll see if he can answer them. And the amount of people that texted us back right away, if first of all, which part of the brownie they preferred, which was very funny, but then also questions for this player, like in an instant. I mean, it's so invasive in a good way, I guess. Like a tweet is just so, you know, you can kind of scroll by it and not think twice, but if you're really getting a text message, it's really a notification. You're looking at your phone. It's right where your friends are. It's just the response to text has been awesome, and the fact that we can make it more personal now is really exciting.
So, how do those text messages come back? Is it like centralized on a phone, or does it go to a specific number, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we have a phone number. It's actually a 412 phone number, which is like Pittsburgh area code, which is nice. It looks like a real human. And it is, because we're all on the back end looking at it. So they have an app. So I can just send a text through the app. It looks just like a regular text message on my phone. And then same thing on the computer. I can just log into the website and shoot off a text through there. You know, we can send videos, we can send GIFs. Like, it looks just like you would be texting a friend. And the great thing too is we can segment people into communities based on keywords that they enter. So like, for example, on fan appreciation night, we had a keyword that went up on the big screen. Everyone text this, you know, we'll have like things throughout the night. And then we gave away prizes via text, and we knew all of these people that were in the building because they see the keyword, and then we could text them back and say, you're winning this thing, and then they can announce it in game. And it's all kind of happening in a digital space, but then also in person. And we have groups for students, student rush program, text them specifically about certain deals, and season ticket holders have some exclusive content pieces that they receive. So it's been good. And then also we have an employee group. So, you know, if anything should ever happen with our front office that we needed to get on message really quickly, there was something that happened outside with the police, I think a little while back, and HR sent out an email, and I immediately was like, should we send this in a text message to the employees? And yeah. So it's a really great tool for getting out information about the team, but then also having that nice back and forth with our fans, and having season ticket holders are more comfortable with text than, you know, tweets or TikToks. Mm-hmm. It kind of provides a unique opportunity there as well.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. So do you also then port the pillars that you were talking about earlier? Do you port your voice into the text message system as well?
I think a bit. Like we try and always, yes, the brand's always in mind with everything. I think the key is how do we adapt that voice to each platform? So, and who we're talking to. So I would say, yes, the initial message is always kind of with that, those pillars in mind and our mission in mind and our vision and all of those things that, you know, big brands have like all of those things that you need to be aware of. I was like looking at, we all have at our desks. It's like our vision, our mission, our values, our goals. And it's like hanging up at our desk. So I think that's always baseline, always thinking about those things. But then beyond that, how do we make the text message feel human? And community says, you know, you want to ask questions and you want to almost like you want to mess things up sometimes. Like if you're texting with a friend, there might be a spelling error, you know, like how do we think about that? And like, do we want to send out spelling errors all the time? No. But like if something funny happens with the team and we like capture it, like we could send out a text message and see if people are into it. And if we're texting, you know, at the end of the workday, maybe that's top of mind for people over a certain age, and maybe we text something different to a certain age group than a younger age group, and we can talk about school versus work. So I think we think about it, but we also are always just thinking about who are we speaking to, and how do we make it work for the platform where we are. I know TikTok might have a trend that might make no sense on Facebook, but our brand stays the same. We would never do something off brand. It might not work for the audience that's within a certain platform. So
the burning question, I'm sure everybody's wondering, what do people prefer brownie wise, the middle or the edge?
Well, there is a right answer, and that's clearly the edge, in my opinion.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, so I will say that that's the answer, but the actual question, it was fairly mixed. On text, I think center had the slight edge. And that was funny the way I said that. The center won on text message. And then on Twitter, I literally went back and forth. I'm going to look now. I can't remember who actually ended up winning. Yeah, center won 51.7% to 48.3%. So it's pretty close.
So you're basically asking who likes a more raw brownie versus who likes a more cooked brownie, right?
I mean, I guess, but I would say that the edge piece usually has a little bit of the center on it, right? Like, so you kind of get the best of both worlds. But, you know, who am I to judge? Everyone can, the world would not be a good place if everyone liked the same brownies, you know? It's better if everyone likes their own thing, so.
More to go around that way.
Right, perfect.
As you're looking at platforms, maybe like community or testing out things that you're going to have to outsource in some sense or buy into, how do you go about trying to figure out what's worth it to you?
Sure. So I guess anytime we're having a conversation with a vendor, I think we have a pretty good understanding of what we currently have and then what it's lacking or what we wish it had. So that's kind of like the starting point. And then a lot of the time in sports and here too is different departments have different vendors that do similar things. So we'll start like looking around and asking like, do you have a vendor that does this? And if we found something that was more enterprise, would it fit your needs and then also ours? So I think we try and a lot of ways for us, digital is in the center of the organization. Like everything kind of filters through us to get to the fans. So we're pretty on the pulse of what's going on within the organization because we're the ones updating the website and sharing on social media and texting and pushing through the app and all of that. So I think we're lucky in that way that we're pretty tuned into what's happening across the board. And then we do our research. You know, we talk to other teams that are using vendors, and we talk to the vendors, and we see the demos, and we hear about what other teams like and don't like, and make the most informed decision, I guess, that we can.
So, in your current role as VP of Digital, what does your day to day look like? We've kind of talked about the pillars and the voice and all that kind of stuff. What does your day to day look like?
I would say day to day is always a complicated thing when it comes to digital and social. So I would say the general day to day is we come into work, we have an idea of what we want to do, we have an idea of what we have to do, and other things can take over. So we have a system, a project management system called Workfront. So all the things we have to do kind of live within that system. Proofs go through there, you know, comments back and forth on changes for things, social posts that need to be done, form stacks that need to be built, analytics that need to be pulled, website updates, all of that. But yeah, like at any moment, all the things that we thought we were going to do kind of can fall by the wayside. We get an email like, hey, this is coming out, we need to get a plan together for this, or something will happen on social that we need to, you know, address, or something will happen in the world that we need to address. And that's part of the excitement of the job. That's part of what makes it sometimes tough, but it's very common, I would say, for PR to email and say something's coming that we weren't expecting, or we didn't know was coming exactly at the time that it is. And then also something bigger to happen, a trend or news or anything like that in the hockey world, or just on social in general and on a certain platform, we kind of adapt and get moving on those things as well.
If you were to talk to somebody who was entry level, I got this question within the last week or two, what would you look for when you're hiring somebody who doesn't post a ton of their own social content? What would be your recommendation to them of how they can break into this field? And what would you encourage them to start doing now that they can do on their own to put themselves in a position to be someone that you would look at for hiring?
Yeah, I would say I would try and get as well-rounded as you can within the business. So, you know, if you're a graphic designer, I think it's great to still know some motion and to know some video editing and know, you know, if like our graphic designer, I can say to him, hey, like I want this for Instagram and also TikTok. And he'll know the different aspect ratios that I need. And he'll think about how this will fit within the different platforms because he understands the landscape of what we're doing. So I think no matter what the job is, whether it's, you know, web design or graphics or social or analytics or anything, the more you know about the area of your business, you know, it could be as simple as taking a LinkedIn learning class or a class in school, or doing a shadow of somebody for a day, or asking people about their informational interview, whatever. I think that's huge. You have to pinch hit in sports, like everybody can come up to you and ask you to help out with different things, especially this past year. I mean, anything could kind of come our way. So being well-rounded and interested in different aspects of the business, I think is great. And then beyond that, I would say just attitude is a huge thing for our team. Like we work so many hours, and really the expectations are very like sky high. So I think if you're not working with good people that can forgive mistakes and bring positive energy, One of our former coaches used to say that his big thing was don't be an energy vampire. And like, I think we kind of like live that way sometimes. We don't need that on our team. We need good energy, because if we don't have that, then we'll all be like, it'll be horrible for the team morale.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a big thing. It's just having a good attitude and bringing a positive energy to the team, because otherwise it's stressful. So that's a big one.
Awesome. To wrap it up, what do you feel like are your most proud moments working in the Penguins organization?
Yeah, I think when I think about the things that stand out, I think the great thing about social is like the emotions of it, right? So like you're creating these like really awesome moments, and I think those little moments are what stands out. And so, you know, the personal interactions that we've had with fans, making someone's day, you know, whether it's a text message that says happy birthday and they can't believe that like it's a human being on the other side, or something bigger, like sending a jersey and surprising a fan. One of our fans had his jersey, it was like red wine got spilled all over it, and we just like sent one as a replacement without much real like conversation about it. And I think that's like one of the great parts of my job. And my dad got to join the team on his on the dad's trip right before the pandemic, and I think for me, like being able to give him one of those moments, I think I mentioned, you know, like I grew up with him, like being a season ticket holder and a big Penguin supporter. So that's been awesome, is having that kind of moment. Him like sitting right next to like Sidney Crosby's dad. He's like, oh my God, like I'm on this trip with like, you know, these professional like athletes and their families, and how cool, like my daughter who like can't barely skate, like is giving me this moment. So stuff like that definitely stands out.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.